hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Good Areas Live. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me is Jared Kimber, who you can find absolutely everywhere. We're here to review England's 5-wicket win over India. But before we even get there, Jared, Test cricket, it keeps on delivering. There's talk about 4-day test matches and then we get this 5-day thriller. I mean, it's literally a drug and I want more of it over and over again.
It's there was a period today where I had to like mute about 5 different groups I was in because and like random groups too. Like one was like this old business group that like these people suddenly got excited and started messaging each other about the cricket. And they're not even like cricket guys. And then another one was Ezekiel's under 11 cricket team. They just went ballistic. And it wasn't even close at that stage. I think that was before the first wicket had even fallen, right? And I ended up watching some of the game down at Rob Key's Cricket Club completely randomly. It's where Ezekiel plays tennis. And while I was there, I was watching that. And like the conversations there, which it's just the same thing. Like I've said this before, it changes you physically watching a test match like this. You can't like control yourself properly in a way that you would want to. It's such a visceral thing. And it's great that we get moments like this. And this didn't end up being that close, right? Like there was a couple of moments where we thought it would, but it never got that close. I don't know. You were in the group. I think they got to about a 20% chance of winning India towards the end. But it doesn't matter, right? It's just, there are so many like, oh, the new ball's coming, right? Or eventually Ben Stokes is going to go out reverse sweeping. And, you know, what's Jamie Smith going to do? You can't help it. The variables are just there the whole time and they take up your brain space and it does it in a way that other sport just doesn't.
Yeah, that's why I think that it's a different sport altogether. I don't like to club it with the limited overs formats at all because there's the overnight drama. And you mentioned how it might not have been super close by the end, but this game ebbed and flowed like crazy. I mean, India were 430 for 3 in the first innings and 287 for 3 in the third innings. And then they have those collapses. They drop 7 catches across 2 innings. They score 835 runs on aggregate and end up losing this game. 5 individual hundreds in that innings. The first time India have ever achieved that. And they then become the first team to lose a test match after scoring 5 individual hundreds. And yeah, in England, ultimately...
You said in the innings. Do you mean in the match they got 5?
I meant in the match. Yes, yeah, 5 say, in the match.
I was like, did I miss some? It's possible I did. No. I was camping for some of it.
Towards the end, England comfortably win by 5 wickets. Jamie Smith seals it with a 6. Mm-hmm. And I mean, England have kind of made a habit of this, right? They've now defeated India, chasing 370 plus scores in the last 2 home tests versus them. And, you know, the funny bit over here is that I saw lots of people on Twitter throw shade at Nasir Hussain, right? As is always the case with the toss, that, oh, Ben Stokes has pulled off a Nasir Hussain by bowling first. But England, in their last 6 test matches at Headingley, they've won them all bowling first. Ben Stokes knows that his team is one of those teams that can chase down big totals. And you've got to give it to the man, right? They've made a habit out of this.
Yeah, I mean, look, I understand why. Because realistically, India still should have made 600. And if they make 600, probably England lose this game. We can play it back any way we want. But if they make it to 600, it would have been much harder from that point of view. And England did look ordinary for several times. I thought... Well, I don't know how you felt, but watching the bowl several times, I just like, if Ben Stokes doesn't get a wicket, I don't know how they're going to break through here. Did he get the first 2 in the on day one? I'm trying to remember.
He got 2 out of the first 3, I reckon.
3, yes. And I think he should have got more. Like, I really thought he bowled well. He looks like the leader of their attack.
That's true.
You know, and so they're in a really weird situation where you don't, and it tells you just how versatile he is compared to, say, a Callis or a Sobers. You know, even if they're a lot more talented, his versatility is phenomenal when you look at him that way as a bowler. But the point being is that they had a chance, India, to bat England out of this game, and they didn't do it. And I think if you go back, and I can't remember when I did this, mate, it might have been 2022, but I think it was 2023 when I was talking about baseball. So the thing about baseball is that the way they play forces you to beat them, right? In a way that traditionally in test cricket, you can just stay ahead of the game, right? Yeah. You keep rolling over and everything else. But because England take big swipes and they do things really dramatically with the bat and with the ball, it forces you to actually ice the game until, you know, a bit like what Pakistan did to them, right? When it was just like, well, they're not going to chase this score. And then Pakistan rolled through them. And you don't see that that often in test cricket. traditionally, a team is ahead, they stay ahead, they play it safe, and it's hard for the other team to ever catch up. Hmm. But England takes so many risks with the bat, with the ball in the field, all these different things, that it means that at any stage, if one of them comes off, they seem to just be able to roar back into it. And as you said, there were many times when they were out of this game. And it's the most enjoyable thing about baseball is probably this. I know the chases are great, but and the high scoring and all that. But it's probably the fact that they keep games interesting when they shouldn't. Hmm. And the least interesting thing about baseball is the fact that when they're winning the games, they do the exact same for the opposition, right? They keep taking risks even when they're massively in front, and they allow the opposition, when no one else plays like them, they can just go back into cruise control. Hmm. And it was something that I did like about today. I thought Duckett was brilliant and Crawley was lucky. I think if that's my notes on that innings. But if you look at it from that perspective, and you go through the entire innings and the way that they played and everything else, I think there is an element again of this was actually them playing a little bit more within themselves. They didn't give India a lot of chances, right? Yeah. Like there was occasional times when they did, but mostly they just batted normally because they were like, the conditions are in our favor, so we're going to play normal cricket.
True.
That is when baseball goes to a different level.
I mean, think about this, right? This was the highest match aggregate as far as runs are concerned in India-England tests. And the fact that the team chasing has won this test match, I think that has to be credited to baseball. But to your point, this is like a third iteration of baseball that we're witnessing over here, where you see Zach Crawley, who you said was lucky, and I mean, kept attempting that pull shot over and over again, but he ends up with 65 off 126. Mm. That is very uncharacteristic of Zach Crawley. England are scoring at like below 5 and over 4 runs and over. They're finally using their brains a lot more now, and I like this iteration of baseball.
No, definitely. And you know, to take your thing a bit further, I think Varun might have, I don't know if he said this on third innings, but the minute that Zach Crawley went above a 50 strike rate, he got himself out again, which was pretty funny. But yeah, I mean, the thing is that, you know, we watched a team like Boston Celtics win the championship in the NBA like a year back. And then the way that they play is so extreme that it's actually very hard for them in certain situations just to play good basketball because they're like, no, we have to, you know, no layups. We just have to keep shooting as many threes as possible, which actually brings the opposition back in again. Whereas if you play it more sensibly and the other team doesn't know when you're going to put the foot all the way down to the accelerator, that actually makes it really, really hard. Or if you only put the foot all the way down when you're already out of the game and that's the only way to get back.
Yeah.
I think that makes it really difficult for the opposition, right?
True.
And so what most of us have been saying for a long time is, and look, I probably am more pro baseball than a lot of people are, only because I do think it worked, even if I thought there was limits to it and everything else. But what a lot of us have been saying from the start is, it's not that we don't believe in baseball, it's that we don't believe that you should do it 100% of the time and that you should tell the opposition that you're going to do it 100% of the time.
True.
Because then everyone can plan for it. And so if you I can't remember if it was, it must have been Alistair Cook on the BBC when I was driving around briefly. He said something along the lines of, if you told me that England were like 170 without loss, you'd be like, wow, they must have done this off like, you know, 25 overs or something, right? And it wasn't. And that is a step in the right direction for a team that has not always played like this. And that's been one of their big flaws is that they've drank the Kool-Aid. Sometimes you just need to not drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't just throw the kitchen sink at it, right? They were very watchful versus Bumrah. They didn't even give him a wicket in their final innings, right? In the fourth innings, which I thought was like a big battle won. And if you think about it, right, they go on to post Duckett and Crawley, or how I like to call them, Crockett. They post 188 runs for the opening partnership, chasing 371, right? This was the highest fourth innings England opening pair partnership since 2001. Athers and Triscothic got it versus Pakistan. And it was very, very un-baseball-like at many different occasions. And the one thing that I noted about Ben Duckett was that whenever he would play Jasprit Bumrah, he would do just enough to protect his off stump. And he would make sure that he doesn't play the ball onto his own stumps, right? And that is a very, very intelligent tweak. That's not easy to do.
No, there was a couple of things as well. I think I made a small video about it last night. I don't know if we ended up putting it up, but I'm sure that it'll be up in the next couple of days, which is, you know, Zach Crawley was closing the face on Bumrah a little bit in the first innings and was suddenly, you know, batting with a much straighter face. Just little tweaks like that, again, is very different from the, are we just going to play our way?
Yeah.
Side of things.
True.
Right?
So Stokes who blocked. I'm going to stop
out,
you.
Stokes who blocked out Bumrah as well.
Yes, he
then,
did.
And then attacked everyone else. Like little things like that. That's not baseball. That's Smart cricket.
Yeah. But also, my question to you is, does Zach Rawley get double the amount of cigars and whiskey now? Or does he not get any at all?
Yeah, I mean, do you put him on a limit? Do you ask him for some of the old cigars back? I don't know. But I think that for me, it's just use your strength when it's your strength. Use the conditions when the conditions are in your favor. Use the match when the match is in your favor.
Yeah.
Then you make it. Look, it's still quite a one-dimensional theory, right? And there are going to be times when we all know it's going to fail and we've all seen it fail. Like, no one has an issue with that. Like, if this team was great, they wouldn't have to play this extreme form of cricket, right? They'd just play normal cricket. But if you can mix it with smart thinking and everything else, I think that puts you in an incredible position.
Yeah, no, undoubtedly. And another really fun stat for this particular test match was that it is the only test in history which has 707 ducks. So that's one for the nerds out there. And I actually wanted to talk a bit about the conditions with you because you mentioned them just now and how England capitalized on them. We were expecting a dry English summer. We spoke about it in the preview of the World Test Championship final. Now, that surface was something else. But over here, we saw flat deck for 3 days. And after that, on the morning of day four, the ball started doing its bits, right? It was a bit nippy. The odd ball would kick up off the surface. And similarly, on day five, it got a bit nippy, but then the odd ball started staying low a bit. So it was ultimately a pretty good cricketing surface.
Yeah, I think so. It's a weird one, isn't it? Like, I've obviously just done a video that you might have seen some of the script for, which is about how odd Headingley is and why we keep seeing these big chases there and all that sort of stuff, which is fine. But the interesting part of all that is that it doesn't play like other wickets. And we have to almost reframe our brains, which I think someone might have even put this in a comment before we even started, like, maybe it was on something else I saw, but like, will anyone ever win the toss and that first again at Headingley, right? Which I think is a very fair way of looking at this, right? So it is a little bit different. There were probably times when I got, and I didn't watch the whole test match, so other fans might have a different view. I watched most of day one, then I watched MV play, and then I saw it in a different pattern than everyone else. I saw every ball, but not in the normal pattern. But it did feel a little bit to me like, oh, we're going to see a wicket.
It did.
Is there going to be a wicket? Now, that some of that just has to be that we've been retrained, right? Because actually, it's a pretty good test match. We would have, you know, back in the 90s, we would have been hammering this test match, right? We would have been one of the greatest test matches of all time. And we're not quite putting it in that level. So I do think that we have to accept that a little bit. And as you said, I think there was something in the surface. Or if India and England caught their chances at a slightly more respectable rate, it's probably both teams are bowled out and we see 40 wickets as well. Like, we only saw 35 wickets. But if we just saw the catches taken, I can't remember the full numbers of all the catches dropped. You might remember, but
oh, I do.
If we'd seen that. How many catches were dropped in the game?
So overall, there were 11 catches which went down. And I'm being a bit harsh over here. By the way, bring your mic closer, as Arco is mentioning. So India
mic's here. It can't get any closer unless I fillet it.
So India dropped 7 overall across both innings. Jaiswal dropped like 4 of those, right? And off Bumrah's bowling, there were like 5 dropped catches, out of which one he was responsible for himself. And England dropped 4, but I'm also counting the one-handed Stokes half chance, which really isn't a dropped catch. He stopped a boundary. And then the one that Duckett dropped right towards the end when the lead was around 350, right? Because Duckett dropped one earlier and as did Brooke. But that was also kind of a half chance. But 11 catches dropped is a lot. And no other team other than India has dropped more catches in a single test match in England in the last 20 years.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I'm just going to quickly have a look at how many catches. Yeah, because there was a couple of LBWs and a couple of bowls. Yeah, it seems like a pretty bad percentage. I don't think it's horrendous. Like, do you remember you remember England in the Ashes in Australia? Was it last time, the COVID Ashes? Where I'm just like, you know, that just felt like they could not take a catch. I didn't quite feel it was at that level. I think it also sticks out a little bit more that sometimes you get a lot of drop catches and then you get so many catches taken afterwards, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, you could have 2 or 3 catches dropped in the slips and then the next 4 are taken and it doesn't matter. The fact that India had chances to get themselves so far ahead in the game and then never really did after the drops probably makes it more stark. But the stats you just said is pretty wild, right? Like, that's pretty out of there.
I mean, look, catches do win matches, as cliche as that sounds. But that wasn't the only reason why India lost, of course. Their bowling wasn't good enough at times. You know, I know it was a flat deck and everything, and we shouldn't be too harsh on Siraj and Prasidh and Shardul. But then again, it looked like a one-man show for a lot of this game, right, with Bumrah. And also, you have to bring in the batting collapses in this because, they, as you said, they could have scored 600 in the first innings. So it was a multitude of reasons due to which I feel like India lost this game, which they really shouldn't have. Like, they were in a commanding position or pole position to win the goddamn test. So anyway, there is obviously more on that. But before that, we shall be taking a break. You guys are watching Good Areas Live with Jared and Behram, and we'll be back in like half a minute. So go nowhere.
I once made a pair in a club game, which is almost impossible to do. But I have been obsessed with batting my entire life. And so I put that into my new book, The Art of Batting. Being that I'm not very good at that skill, I decided to talk to other people who were. So I hit up as many contacts as I could just to talk about batting. Rahul Dravid, Brian Lara, AB de Villiers, Kumar Sangakkara, Ross Taylor, Susie Bates, Nasser Hussain, Ian Chappell, and so many, many, many more. I wanted batters to talk about how they and their friends made runs, because that is the art of batting.
Welcome back to Good Areas Live. You guys are with Behram and Jared, and we were just talking about some of the many reasons or all the many factors that contributed towards India's loss. There's one more that I want to mention. I think they made a tactical mistake by playing Shardul Thakur, because look, they didn't really trust him all too much with the ball, and it looked like a pretty bad call up until he takes two wickets off two rank deliveries. Terrible, atrocious deliveries, right? And look, he didn't contribute much with the bat, and plus he's a swing bowler. We are in the wobble seam era. You don't trust him with the ball, and you're not going to get much with his batting. So if you want to like boost up your batting ranks, play Nitish. Or if you want to play an out-and-out bowler, you've got Kuldeep Yadav, who would have created mayhem on this day five surface, right?
I don't know if he would have created mayhem, but he would have at least made it more variable, wouldn't he? Like, I mean,
They have spammed the reverse sweep versus him?
They would have tried. I mean, whether it would have worked, I don't know. I mean, do you really think they wouldn't have played it? Didn't Ollie Poop, I almost called him. In fact, I did call him Ollie Poop. We can't go back from that. He's now Ollie Poop. Didn't he reverse him in one of the test matches in India? Or am I misremembering? Was that all finger spinners?
He did. Anyway. I'm pretty sure he did. Or actually, I don't remember. Might not have been Kuldeep.
Ollie Poop to our brains there a little bit. So, yeah, look, it would have been a variable. There's no doubt it would have helped. It was kind of funny that in the end, Shardul did his job in the second innings. Obviously, didn't in the first innings, but did his job in the second innings of bowling just absolutely two shithouse balls that got wickets.
Yeah.
Like, that is absolutely his job, isn't it? I'm going to bowl a wide half volley, you know, smash it straight to cover, and then I'm going to bowl, and then I'm going to follow up to a new batter with a shit ball down the leg side, and I'm going to take a wicket there as well. Like, absolute genius levels of shithouse there from
Lord Shardul for a reason. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, the other side of it is, and let's be honest, that I think me and Robbie had talked about this. I can't remember if you and I did it in a preview. I think on TalkSport, I might have talked about it as well. They have to take 20 wickets, right? And Jadeja, in these conditions, more often than not, is a holding bowler, right? He just doesn't have the ability to break through. There are going to be some wickets where he does. This was never one that I thought was going to be the case. He's going to be a holding bowler. So if you're going to take the 20 wickets, can you really afford to have another bowler who's not going to take many wickets when you also have Siraj, who runs hot and cold, and Prasheed Krishna, who is basically starting his career, right?
Like,
it doesn't make sense to me to do that. And that's why I kept saying, I don't see why they kept wanting to be obsessed over having this extra long batting lineup, because you win test matches by bowling, right? Like, by taking 20 wickets. And so I think there's a comment earlier. I'll see if I can bring it up.
And whilst you bring that up, I'd just like to mention that there were batting collapses in both Indian batting innings, you know, after three wickets fell, or as soon as the fourth wicket fell. So it's not like playing the extra batter helped. And I know this is something that I'm saying in hindsight.
He's not an extra batter.
Yeah.
He's not an extra batter
either.
That's the other thing.
Yes.
It's different if he was averaging like 25 or 28 and he was a reliable player. He's not that player. He averages, I don't know, 16, 17, 18, 19, but it's chaos, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can get 66 off 12 balls off him, or get four ducks in a row. Like, it's not like a Pat Cummins, who probably averages roughly the same. You can back Pat Cummins at number eight, and you know you have a fairly consistent partnership that you can build there. You have no idea what you're getting with Shardul.
Yeah.
And also, Pat Cummins has Mitchell Starc behind him.
True.
Right? It's very different if you don't have anyone behind you. So it's I just don't see the point.
But my point was, and I didn't say this in hindsight, I said this as soon as the toss happened, that you should have played Kuldeep ahead of Shardul because you at least have another attacking option with the ball. And in England aren't the best team versus spin, even on decks which don't favor spin. If you've got a spinner or at least a left arm wrist spinner who can turn the ball in both directions and has a solid wrong-un, you could have them in fits, right? But that didn't happen.
You're talking to the wrong person here because it doesn't matter to me. I don't care if it's Akash G. Right. Even Washington Sundar would have been quite interesting in this lineup, right? If they wanted to go with someone who can actually bat, who really stretches the batting lineup. If they really wanted to stretch the batting, Nitish is another one that they could have offered. They didn't really stretch the batting while losing out on the bowling.
Yeah.
And that was my issue with Shardul in this kind of situation. It would be different in a summer where the balls are doing a lot, right? Like if this was like, you know, one of those 2019 summers or one of those years where the Jukes is going nuts. Shardul's perfectly, I mean, he's hard to play in those situations. He's a very smart bowler and he tries really hard and he manages, as you know, as we see today, to get wickets in lucky bits, right? The issue is he's not consistent enough on wickets like this where he's not getting anything back because he's too easy. I think I did a joke, and I don't know what his final figures were, but I was trying to get bookmakers to give me odds on whether he'd go at over a runner ball or under a runner ball in this game, right? Because I just thought the chances of him going under a runner ball in this game were pretty low. I don't know what he went for in the second innings. He might have ended up going under that, but I didn't check. But, you know, that's kind of where I saw him. And so, to me, if you put in one of the other two guys who could actually bat, right, you know, then you've got your elongated batting, or you go with the two guys who can legitimately bowl.
True.
Right? And then you punt on your batting a little bit, but you're like, we're definitely going to take 20 wickets. And if we don't, something's gone horribly wrong. So you say Kuldeep would have been great in the fourth innings. You're not wrong, but Akash Deep probably would have been great earlier in this match as well.
Do you think they'll go triple deep in one of these games where they have Akash, Arsh and Kuldeep?
I mean, you never go the full deep. But, you know.
Well, they went shallow. They didn't play any of those guys.
So I just thought from that perspective, they, you know, that was the issue that I had. And, you know, I've been talking about it for weeks. I didn't like this idea that you could cheat. And I just want to go on Ashwath here, who says, Cheyenne mentioned, I think this might have been Varun who mentioned this. But anyway, bringing the Tesh in is a negative move, a step back. Because essentially what we're saying is they didn't win this test match because they didn't take 20 wickets. Their top order made enough runs in this test match.
True.
There's no issue with their top order. You can complain about the tail.
Yeah.
The Shardul didn't change the tail at all. If you want to go with Nitish or Washington, I understand that. And that might be the way that Gautam Gambhir looks at it. But if you don't have Bumrah in the next test match and you don't have four frontline bowlers, I really, really worry about your team at that point.
Yeah, and that's a very, very valid thing that you've just brought up because we have been told by Bumrah himself that his doctor has said that he's only going to be or he's only fit enough to play three test matches. So India have actually lost one of three Bumrah tests, which is a bigger deal, right? And I mean, look, he was brilliant in the first innings, 5 for 82. And that was despite having all of those catches dropped off him. I think it was 5 overall dropped off Bumrah, 1 he dropped himself. But yeah, he also got broke off a no ball. So in another universe, he would have ended up with a lot more wickets. But look, he was India's best bowler by some distance. I don't know who the second best bowler is. Is it Jadeja on the final day? Is it Prasad Krishna? Who, sure, he took 5 wickets throughout the test as much as Bumrah, but he goes for over 6 runs per over, right? He is smashed by England. He's bowling. His lines and lengths aren't as consistent. And then Siraj only looked good in small patches. So who was their second best bowler?
It's a fair question. I think Prasad Krishna really struggled with the wind. Which broadcast did you have? Do you have Sky's broadcast?
I have TapMad, so I think they get it from Sky because it's a streaming service. It's like Netflix for sports in Pakistan.
So there was a moment when Stuart Broad was talking about how Prasad Krishna had come up to him and asked him how to bowl in the wind, right? And yeah, different grounds in different in different parts of the world create all sorts of issues. It was clear that I think it was his first spell today. I was like, I'm not sure he's going to be able to get to the crease. Like he really looked like he was struggling to be able to get to the crease. And he also had the slope, all these sorts of little things that we don't think about, which do affect bowlers at Headingley at times, right? And so with that said, you have another situation there where he had his issue. I thought Siraj bowled 2 or 3 brilliant spells today, right? And generally, there was one ball early on where he's bowling with good energy. And I was like, yeah, he's got good energy. So he's in rhythm, but he's not moving the ball sideways. Then he darts one back. And I was like, well, this could just be this could be it for England, because if he gets two or three quick wickets here, Bumrah is going to clean up at the other end.
Yeah.
It just never happened.
True.
Like, he just never managed to be able to break through. Jadeja had times when I thought he bowled really well, but didn't break through. But they weren't consistent threats. And I think Nasser Hussain was saying on the commentary at one stage, like, Shubman Gill was going to have to just bowl Bumrah into the ground because there wasn't really another option.
Yeah. And he ends up bowling 43.4 overs, Jared. And now that is probably one of the main reasons why he probably doesn't play the edge batsman test. In addition to, they probably want him at Lords with the slope and everything, you know?
I'm sure. All those things are possible.
43.4 overs are a lot. He doesn't come to bowl with the second new ball.
Yeah. And I wonder if that was... At that stage, they just thought Siraj was more likely to get a wicket than he was, or whether it was tiredness or what it was. But it's a hell of a move, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I just assumed Bumrah would get it, and I would just say, like, everyone would have. Who would have thought he wouldn't have bowled either of those first two overs?
Yeah.
And, you know, that says something about him physically, but also he wasn't at his best in this game. And if you're only fit enough to play in three tests, right, out of a five-test series,
yeah,
does that mean you're just not fit enough? Like, that would be my first question is, that means you're not, you might not be fit enough to play one. Like, I'm not saying you can't get through them, but you might not be fit enough to play in one. And, you know, only he can, him and his doctor and the bowling coach and everything will be able to make those decisions. But that was my thought when I heard that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really interested to see whether or not he features in the next test match, because Cheyenne was making an argument that what if India is 2-0 down? Then you've kind of screwed yourself over. But I said that you probably want Bumrah at Lords. He'll get a smaller workload. He'll use the slope. But the other side of the argument is that you probably want Bumrah on a flat deck. It's not an easy decision to make. And then, of course, you know, Hami, you know, your mate at Talk Sport, he thinks that Bumrah might play all test matches.
I'm starting to think that. What's the next series? Like, there isn't a World Cup for a while.
Yeah.
There isn't the IPL for a while.
True.
And the next home series, I know they need him, but they don't need him as much as they're going to need him now.
They don't need him as much versus West Indies at home.
Right?
Yeah.
So what are you holding him back for?
Is
a question that I have. At the same time, if you break him down forever, then you're screwed. And as I said, if he's not fit enough to play, if he's only fit enough to play in three tests in a 2-month period or whatever this series goes for, I kind of already think that he shouldn't be playing.
Yeah.
But regardless of that, if that's not the way they're looking at it and they're looking at it from the other way, I think it's a really interesting conversation to be had from that perspective. And, you know, Harmy's got really good sources. And he's quite often, you know, very close to the ground on these sorts of things. He doesn't say, it's very rare for Harmy to say something that he hasn't heard a whisper of. It doesn't mean it's going to happen, right? But it's really, you know, Harmy doesn't make things up, you know, like, you know, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but like, you know, you and I will speculate and we'll try and put, Harmy's much more, I heard someone say this, I wonder if this is true, kind of guy. But regardless of that, like, clearly it's an issue. It's going to be an issue anyway. They almost won a series in Australia with one bowler. I don't know if you can just keep doing this.
Also, like, we'll all have our eyes on Gautam Gambhir and Shubman Gill and what sort of attack plays for India in the next game, whether Bumrah will feature, whether Kuldeep will feature, whether Akashdeep will feature, right? All of these questions. But just before we go on break, I want to talk a bit about England's bowlers. We mentioned how Ben Stokes, he was really, really good in the first innings. 4 for 66 and then takes another wicket in this his second dig. He was cranking it up and I was really impressed, especially that wicket of Jaiswal. But other than Stokes, you know, sure, Josh Tung ends with 7 wickets, but he mostly cleans up the tail. Brighton Cass has his moments in India's second innings. And Bash was taken to the cleaners by Rishabh Pant. Wokes got a solitary wicket in this game, if I'm not wrong. So, I mean, to me, I just kept thinking to myself that, look, why did you guys force Jimmy into retirement? Because he still would have gotten something out of this. And, like, England's pace attack and overall bowling attack just wasn't sexy enough. It was the opposite of sexy, despite having a tongue in it.
Hey, now you've been working on that one for a while, haven't you? Yeah. What would I say to that? I would say that I've been saying this for ages. People keep going, oh, you know, England, look at their options. I was like, well, who's their best bowler? Right. And now it looks like Stokes, which is not a good sign.
Nope.
You don't want him to be your best bowler. Wokes, I think it might have been Harmy who told me this. Wokes is like, he's bowling at about 80 miles an hour, which is more or less what we saw. He told me this a couple of weeks ago, and it's more or less what we saw in this test match, right?
Yes.
The problem with Tung and Cass is I like both of them, but I wonder if they're not too similar to each other, which is a shame because I really like both of them. some of the other guys that I thought would have come through, like Potts, haven't quite got to the level that maybe you need them to.
Yep.
So, yeah, look, I think, you know, and obviously Jofra, who knows what how things change if you have a fully fit Jofra, but we have to just assume they will never have a fully fit Jofra.
They were talking about it. Nasser brought it up on the broadcast that, hey, Jofra's just taken a wicket for Sussex. He's gotten Emilio Gay out, and you never know, he might come in the next test. But why would you rush him back? He's just playing red ball cricket after eons.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he played in this series. I certainly wouldn't be surprised if he played against Australia as long as his fitness holds up.
Yeah.
But yeah, the next test seems like a bit of a push, doesn't it?
It does.
But either way, you know, they're in a situation where there's where they're in a situation where I just don't love the way their bowling attack comes together. They got away with it this test match, partly because India just didn't bat them out of the game, probably in the first innings, right?
Yes.
And that's what it comes down to. And even in the second innings, even though India went on to put a good total, there was that period where they were batting maybe a little bit too slow because they were nervous. So they will argue they were right to do because they still sort of collapsed a little bit at the end again,
yes.
right? But that meant that instead of being a 420 chase, right, it was a 370 chase. And who knows what would have happened with a 420 chase.
True.
Sorry, I don't want to get too marijuana reference-y here. But, but yeah.
Anyway, on that note, before we talk about the batting of both sides, we shall be going on a short break. You guys are watching Good Areas Live with Jared and Behram. We'll be back in like half a minute, so stay tuned.
Remember that cricket is a funny game. 100 years before we protected our head, players looked after their groins. So don't be as stupid as old cricketers. Protect your computer now. NordVPN is the protection I use when facing cyber shortballs or when rights issues try to dismiss me. Geo-block so you can watch all the cricket you want. Grab your NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/Kimber.
Welcome back to Good Areas Live. You guys are with Behram and Jared, and we've got a few super chats. I thought we'd just take them now. I love this one from Anshu Yadav. He asks, Virat Kohli batter, agree or not? I would agree with that, Anshu. Definitely.
I would not agree with that.
Really? Wow.
I think he's a bowler.
All right. We've got one more over here by Pranav Gurunathan, or Guru Nathan. I'm sorry if I've butchered your name. He asks, opinions. Karan at 6, left-right combo, Jurel in. I wanted Karan at 5. I don't know why. I was fine with Sai Sudarshan at 3 because, sure, he's inexperienced, but he plays his first-class cricket at number 3.
The Karan Nair thing is really interesting because me and Varun are in the middle of writing a piece about how number 6 specialist batters don't exist anymore. And you could have played Nitesh there. You could have played Washington there, I suppose, if they wanted to. I mean, I don't think that's exactly where this team's head is at, but they could have gone that direction. And instead, they went with a specialist batter at number 6. He went out to 2 pretty good catches. I wouldn't make a massive change based on that.
The Ollie Pope one was a screamer. It was like the best catch of the game, really. And there was a combination catch for India, but that Ollie Pope catch was just terrific. So no issues.
So I wouldn't be too worried about that. I thought he looked much better in the second innings and then suddenly went out. So if he really is the guy that we think he is at the moment, you can't drop him after one test match.
Yeah, like, surely
it's just, not. I just think that's a silly thing to do. And I'm a big fan of Dhruv Jurel. I don't think Dhruv Jurel is a better test match batter right now than Karan Nair. Doesn't mean that Karan Nair is going to come back and make any runs because that's a completely separate argument. But I don't think he's better. Like, it would be different if they had Shreyas Iyer in the team and they were like, well, let's bring Shreyas in. Or Safra's in.
Yeah.
But if it's Dhruv Jurel, you know,
that's true.
That's not for me.
Yeah, those two guys would have been like head-scratching decisions because Shreyas Iyer has upped his game and Sarfaraz's red ball record is insane in first-class cricket. But anyway, next super chat is from Parikshit Upadhyaya. I think I've got that one right, actually. He says, Gill's T20 style slip positions leak lots of runs today. His captaincy was quite reactive, chasing the ball all the time. Can he learn better? I actually think the biggest mistake he made was bowling both of Prasad Krishna and Shardul Thakur in tandem. Other than that, I was happy with his fields. I like attacking fields.
Yeah, so the thing with the slips is, and as I said, I've just done this piece on Headingley. I think what happens is, why this pitch gets so much easier is, the main way to get wickets at Headingley is lateral movement.
Yes.
Right? And so I think they said, I think this was test match cricket or first class cricket, that 50% of the wickets are caught in the cordon, which is one of the highest in world cricket. Then you get to the fourth innings and that just stops, right?
Yeah.
And so quite early on, they took the slips out and because they just didn't expect that the catchers were going to come there because you could see Duckett spooning the ball up, you know, Crawley mishitting the ball and everything else. So I think they were following what the game was doing. Unfortunately for them, it just didn't work. And you look at Prasad Krishna, Siraj, and Bumrah three different times, and sometimes in tandem, they were getting the ball to move back in, and they just needed one to stay like an inch or two lower, and they would have got a couple of LBWs. That all is also where those fielders start to be, they, even if you don't get catches there, they start to cause problems because you can't just mindlessly flick across the line.
Hmm.
So I understand what you're saying, but T20 style slip positions, I mean, that's exactly the same sort of thing we saw England try.
Yep.
For Rishabh Pant, right? Like it's a fairly common thing that we see in modern cricket now, but it also, if the ball isn't carrying brilliantly, unless someone slogs across the line, people are more likely to bring the slip, take out some of the slips and bring them up closer.
For instance,
which means that when you do get an edge, it flows past them anyway.
Yeah. Also, if you remember this one time, there were multiple slip fielders for Ben Duckett, and then he moved one to short mid-on because he plays that gentle dab down the ground, right? Which is a bit aerial. So I thought Gill's captaincy or field positions were all right. In fact, if anything, I had an issue with Stokes when Rishabh kept edging it past an empty slip cordon, right? I thought the fields were a bit too defensive to Rishabh Pant at one point. But then, of course, whoever wins the test match, these things kind of get brushed under the rug at times.
And that was what I was going to say as well. Also, yeah. It is his first test, and he hasn't captained a lot in first-class cricket. So he shouldn't be great at it. He should get better later on in his career as well. I mean, I'd be shocked if this was the best he ever captained in a test match.
True. And give the man some credit for coming into his first innings, batting innings as India's test captain. You know, you've lost two quick wickets. He goes and slams a brisk 147. He drives, he cuts. There's some interesting pulls. I mean, that was a delightful knock, even the flicks. So, I mean, I'm not going to really throw Gill under the bus over here. I was very, very impressed. All right, we've got Rudra Patil with a very generous super chat. So thank you for that, Rudra. He says, ask this to Varun and Cheyenne as well. But what's more worrying moving ahead? Batting or bowling? They both said bowling. And he feels like the expectations have been flipped from before the series. I mean, if it's a flat deck summer, then I wouldn't be too concerned about the batting. But the bowling needs
to
find a combination.
I mean, if you can't take 20 wickets.
Hmm.
So I think in Australia at times, you could say that they're both concerning.
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
It was probably more the batting because they had two players, obviously now we know, on their last legs.
Yep.
And so, you know, it just didn't work the way that they wanted it to work, right? Which is fine. These things happen. We all thought that they would improve their batting a little bit in this series just because they're picking younger players who are in form. Like I think there were times when having Rohit or Virat out on the field would have helped. I think there was probably a period between the 80 run mark and the 150 run mark where Gill just didn't know what to do and the team couldn't really raise itself. Mohammad Siraj was trying to do it, but couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And so there were probably times when you wanted the senior players, but like lots of players made runs in this match, right? Mm. And so you can't really complain about that from that point of view. But we have now seen quite a lot that the struggling to take 20 wickets seems like a bit of an issue.
Yeah.
And they're so, it feels so one-dimensional on Bumrah in a way that is there any other bowling team in the world Pakistan, I suppose, are two-dimensional. But there aren't many teams in the world where you're just like, this guy either takes wickets or they're going to struggle. And it does feel that way with India right at the moment.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Siraj is a perfect example because when he's on one, you know, he looks like a great bowler, but sometimes, like this game, he was inconsistent for long spells. All right, Anon T with the next super chat, he says, why try to hedge and not play Bumrah and Kuldeep? I want to do that.
Some of it is, it's just the number eight position, right? They are really worried about the number eight position. I've been on record for many, many years as saying that I just don't care as much about your number eight. If you can't take 20 wickets, having a strong number eight, that's fuck all for you winning test matches.
True.
Right? Unless that number eight is, I don't know, Daniel Vittori at the end of his career averaging 39 or something, or Jadeja, right? It really doesn't change the games. There's a diminishing returns the further your batting lineup goes in general anyway. If not, South Africa would have beaten Australia a lot when they were batting for like 9. Didn't Pat Simcox bat it at number 11 with test match with first class hundreds? Like, they still struggled against Australia because Australia could always take 20 wickets on any kind of surfaces and South Africa could not. And so eventually you have, and if your top order average, like, I don't know, 35 against the Australian top order, well then even the best number eight that you can find is going to average about 20 against them, right? And so if you expand that theory to all of Test cricket, it doesn't really make sense to do that. So I would just be looking at what is the best chance of us taking 20 wickets in that next test? And that's how I would do it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Another super chat by Laughing at Nothing. He says, if India was not bowling Shardul as much, then it seems like Nitish would be a better option. So we've already had this discussion, Laughing at Nothing. Yeah. You can rewind and go and listen to
but
our
Nitish
rationale.
Nitish playing might still not have helped him get the 20 wickets.
Exactly.
Right? Now, the difference with Nitish is he can bat. And at number eight, he might be the sort of player I was just talking about, that sort of Vittori player. I just don't think it's necessary to use that. And also, again, there are probably times when Nitish at six and Shardul at eight would be really interesting for India on certain kinds of wickets. We may not see one of those wickets in this series.
Yeah.
I told you all before that I thought these were going to be pretty flat wickets. Have a look at the three tests we've seen this summer in the UK. The Zimbabwe test pitch was really, really flat.
Yep.
The World Test Championship pitch was really, really flat eventually.
Yep.
And this pitch was pretty flat, right? Like, we haven't seen a traditional English wicket so far this summer. I'm not saying we won't see one, because we might. But at the moment, it doesn't look that way.
It needs to rain a lot for that to happen, I suppose. Anyway, one guy I really want to talk to you about is one of my personal favorites. Whenever I'm asked about what the Fab Four of the future looks like, I always say there's a Fab One, because Yashasvi Jaiswal is leaps and bounds ahead of the rest. He's averaging 53 plus as an opening batter, 500s in 20 test matches. He scores 100 in his first test in the West Indies, Australia, and now in England. Announces himself, right? If it's full, he'll drive you. If it's short, he'll cut you. Offside play to die for. If you bowl him a bumper, he could uppercut you. And he's really, or looks really, really good when he's batting. But such a weird test match for the guy, right? Starts on a high, and he is the wonder kid or the prince who was promised, and then goes on to drop four catches, fails in the second innings. How would you buck this sort of player up in this sort of time? Because I feel like he's very, very important for India.
I don't think he lacks the confidence. So I suppose I would just go and have a look at him a little bit, and I would see how he is. If it's just, guys, I let you down, but I'll come back next time, I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah.
But if it's something else, then you need that. You know, that's when you need good leaders. And that should be what Gautam Gambhir is doing, right?
Absolutely.
That should be his gig. And so if that is his gig, then he needs, but that's just when you have to work out how management works. I have seen it before where people have dropped lots of catches and it's affected their batting, but didn't KP drop like a million catches in the 05 Ashes? Like, I've seen players who can't take catches at all. And then sometimes, was it Rory Burns I'm thinking of? Was it Zach Crawley? Zach Crawley is probably one where when he was catching bad, I thought that actually affected him. So it can go in either direction.
Yeah. Right?
But you have to work that out as a coach. I'm not too worried about that.
No, absolutely not.
I'm more worried about his fielding in general than I am about that.
I mean, I think he's generational. I'm a big fan. And if I was his coach, I would tell him, you're averaging 53 plus as an opening batter across different conditions. You are 23 years of age. You can obliterate pace and spin. You're going to win us the series. So I don't think there's anything to worry over there. And speaking of batters or young batters, we've got a certain Harry Brook from England. Very interesting test match for him. Scores 99 in his first dig and a duck in the second. And even that 99 could have been a duck, right? Like, he was dismissed off a no ball. He was dropped, I want to say, twice, and then he dropped one himself. Here's an interesting stat for you. In the last 12 months, he has given 27 catching opportunities in Test cricket, and there have been 12 drops. So he's really riding his fortune, isn't he?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Look, he reminds me of a young Michael Clarke in that, and maybe Johnny Bairstow. Remember, Usman Samiuddin had this theory with Johnny Bairstow, and we tried to work it out, but it was probably a little bit too early in the stat age of he just seems to hit the ball in the air a lot, and he hasn't been caught. And eventually, there will be a regression to the mean. And if you look at Harry Brook and you look at Johnny Bairstow and you look at Michael Clarke, they didn't just hit the ball in the air. They specifically hit it in the air at a catchable height.
Yeah.
So very differently than, say, some players who use the air, like Gilchrist, right?
True.
Though I suppose Gilchrist on the offside could do it. But generally, when Gilchrist went high, it went high.
Yes.
Right? And so it would clear. There is something about Harry Brook that I do think he does hit a lot of balls in the air that are quite catchable. I don't know if that theory holds up, because it's a really hard one to look at. But I think those sorts of players can go on a bit of a run where their numbers look really good when they don't. He's still a special talent.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know how good he is yet. We're a long way away from working that out.
Yeah.
But he's a special talent. The way he sees the ball and how early he sees the ball is remarkable.
True. And I mean, the way he was taking down Bumrah and using his feet to smash the ball on the offside, we already know he has the golf swing and the baseball swing, but there's a lot to love about Harry Brook anyway. So we're going to take another short break and come and talk about punt and duck it, because we haven't done that. So you guys are watching Good Areas with Jared and Behram. Go nowhere. We'll be back after this short break.
The scores were level. They just needed a conversation. Instead, the only time they met up was at the same end, and Australia would go on to win that World Cup. In HitWicket, you've got those game-changing special abilities at your fingertips. Need to accelerate the scoring? Bang! Activate 2x, and suddenly every boundary is worth double. That's right, a 6 becomes a 12. The opposition won't know what hit them. Or maybe you need to put the brakes on a high-scoring power play. No problem. Unleash the heck, and watch the batter struggle to even score a single run. In fact, they might even end up going backwards. It's absolute chaos. Look at the King of Spin, for example. But there's more to it than just flashy special moves. Every player has their own unique passive traits that add another layer of strategy. Gilly, for example, he's a seam hunter, a nightmare for any pace bowler. And Beefy, well, he's got a golden arm. The longer a partnership lasts, the more dangerous he becomes. HitWicket challenges you to think like a true captain. You've got to analyze your players, understand their strengths and weaknesses, and then use those abilities and traits to outwit your opponent. It is a real test of your cricketing brain. Now, if you excuse me, I've got a strategy to revise.
All right, then. Welcome back to Good Areas Live. And you guys are with Jared and Behram. Let's start with Rishabh Pant. And I want to bring Aswath Govindarajan's comment over here. He says, India haven't won a Senna test when Pant has scored a century. It's true. He's scored 6 test hundreds in these countries. And India haven't won a single one of those 5 test matches. And I really feel for the guy, because we were actually
Didn't
counting...
Didn't he make a 90 at the Gabba?
Yes.
I know it wasn't 100.
Yep.
But you know what I mean?
Yes, yes, that's
was
true.
That.
It's funny how all of us in the Good Areas chat were really counting down all of the weird records that Rishabh Pant has achieved in this test match. And if I can remember on the top of my head, he became the second wicketkeeper batter to score twin hundreds in a test match after Andy Flower. Mm-hmm. He became the first Indian batter to score twin hundreds versus England in a test match. His 252 runs in this test match was the most scored by any wicketkeeper in England in test matches. And he also has the joint most test hundreds for any wicketkeeper batter in England. He's level with Alex Stewart and Matt Prior. Rishabh Pant is a man who operates in his own universe. At times he was doing Rishabh Pant things, you know, with that fall over scoop. And at times he was leaving the ball. He was in the 90s for an eternity. It was so anti-Pant at times. But I love how he has these internal battles with himself, Jared. Like, he's talking to himself. He's like, play the ball straight. Don't get lured into this. And I mean, 134 and 118, an absolute spectacle. And just the way he does it, right? Even Sunil Gavaskar was happy this time.
Yeah, we'll do a footmarks on that
Yes. Where
we get to the full details of that. Look, there aren't many players. This is why I am so defensive of Rishabh Pant. It's not because I like Rishabh Pant more than any other human being. It's because I understand what Rishabh Pant can do that other players cannot, right? And his ability to just destroy bowling and destroy England's plans, they just didn't know what to do to him.
Yeah.
Right? And you know, he's such a brilliant ball striker. He's got such incredible eye. He's so creative with his batting.
Yeah.
Which is not something you would always say. But, you know, there aren't, you know, he's not Javed Miandad, but he's in that Javed Miandad mold of, like, how do you bowl to someone who's got so many different variables that they can throw at you at any stage?
Yep.
And that there's that, and a bit like Miandad, he has that sense of randomness, right? Of, you know, Miandad wasn't an attacking test player or even an attacking white ball player. But Miandad would have overs where he'd be like, this one's going for 20.
Yeah.
Right. And you never knew where he was standing on the crease. And you never knew whether he's going to play on the offside or the leg side or whatever. And Rishabh Pant has all that with the T20 skills to go with it.
Yes.
Right? And that is just so hard to handle, right?
True.
It's, you know, just absolutely incredible from that perspective. And so you've got to, you know, he's just, he really is a marvel from that point of view.
I mean, he is so uninhibited and brazen in his approach. Like, there's this freedom of expression that you feel when you watch Pant. It's very visceral in the sense that he's just going to randomly step outside his crease and bash you for a four over your head. Or he's going to find these weird angles. He's going to play his pokey shots. And it's the way also that he took down Shoaib Bashir, because every other batter was in their comfort zone. They were just knocking him around. But he was like, nah, I'm just getting fidgety. I can't just let this bowler go away and not kind of hammer him for sixes. And that's what he ends up doing. And I feel like he already is in India's all-time test team, right? He's the wicketkeeper for me. He's averaging 44.44 after 44 test matches, which is incredible.
I don't think that, is that really even up for debate?
Like, I don't think it is. I think he's better than Dhoni.
Yeah, but I don't think you'd get that much argument, would you? I mean, Dhoni just never worked out test batting. He played some brilliant innings, but overall, he just didn't work it out in the same way. And the biggest difference for me is, even if you say Gilchrist is a better player than Pant, or better batter than Pant as well, the difference is that Pant can bat at five, right? Which gives you incredible flexibility. You know, so someone was saying in the comments that, like, you know, he's wicket keeping, and to be fair, he didn't keep very well in this, but I can't find the message, but they were saying that, yeah, here it is, but from Phil, play Jarrell and give him the gloves, right? Which makes sense. I can understand why you would say that, but that's, now I'm just pressing random messages. But the point being is that you have the ability to do that with him because of his incredible flexibility. Whereas Australia never quite felt as comfortable with Adam Gilchrist going up the order, right? And you know, we saw Bairstow at times struggle to be a wicketkeeper and be up the order, and Butler as well. And, you know, that Rishabh Pant is brilliant in that. And look, it's hard. I actually think it's harder being an attacking Indian cricketer than it is being an attacking cricketer from any other country.
That's true.
Because every single failure is just like, and it's people, no offense, but it's people who don't really understand what he's doing, or it's people who are like, well, this isn't the right way to do it, right? And it's like, I think you just need to shut the fuck up sometimes.
Yeah.
And be like, if you're going to take the great innings, then you also have to accept that sometimes he's going to hit that. I mean, was it Cass when he hit the ball straight up in the air and he could have been caught?
Yes.
You just have to accept that. And people don't really accept that.
That's what Ravi Shastri kept saying, that it's a percentages game and this is how he backs himself. And I'm totally with him, right? And I mean, that somersault celebration kind of tells you everything about the man. He always has a smile on his face and he loves playing cricket the way he plays it. And
Ashwas says, are you saying Gilly couldn't bat at number five? Yes, I'm definitely saying that Gilly. One of the reasons that Gilly was so incredible, I think, was that he batted at number seven behind. I think Gilly came in with the highest median runs of like any player in the history of the game, right? Like, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Australia always had this theory that if he came in too early, that it would damage Gilchrist. That isn't the case with Rishabh Pant, right? They started as a number six. He's already gone to a number five. I don't think there's any reason for him to bat any higher. And Andy Flower only batted at number five. I still think Pant should probably bat at number six. But Australia never felt comfortable enough for Gilchrist to bat at number six and then use an Ian Harvey or an Andrew McDonald or whoever it would have been at number seven, which I think tells you something about that. Part, you know, they could have used Gilchrist's flexibility. They were like, no, it works better at number seven, so we're going to go there. You know, so I do think there is a big difference with the way that Rishabh Pant did. That doesn't mean that Gilchrist isn't a better player than Rishabh Pant. What it means is he doesn't give you the same flexibility.
True.
Right? And that's what I'm really saying there.
Also, speaking of median scores, Ollie Pope has the worst balls per dismissal, or third worst balls per dismissal ratio for any batter in Test cricket who has scored more than 3,000 Test runs. The worst on those lists, or on that list, is Broad and Warne. And this test is an apt representation of that. Like, 106 of the first innings, looks amazing while doing it. Sure, he's dropped, but whatever. And then he goes out and is cleaned up for eight in the second, or his second innings. And I mean, we're going to end up doing a footmarks on him too, aren't we?
Yes, we will. I've been thinking about it for a little while. Varun sent me the median stuff a while back.
Yeah.
And then today I was looking up his record in the fourth innings, and then I found his record in the third innings. I actually think he might be one of the most interesting batters in the world for a very long time. And people won't like that. People are like, oh, he's not very good. I'm like, interesting isn't good. Interesting can be anything. And that's the point of the word interesting.
Yep.
But he is a fascinating batter. Because nothing about Ollie Pope makes any sense at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I just figured today he was going to come in and go out LBW really early on. Like, that was just my assumption was, he's just going to play around a straight one straight away. And yeah, he's almost at the Marcus North levels now, where I think you can just bet on him unders every time he comes out to bat.
I mean, there's a stat, right?
After that, you bet on him overs.
Exactly. Every time he gets to 30, he's averaging like 87. And he's different from, say, someone like a KL Rahul, who, when you look at his average of around 34, you're like, that just doesn't sound right. He's a much better player than that. And his leaves on the morning of day four kind of... they pay tribute to that. Ollie Pope is random. there is no science to Ollie Pope, and he'll have that one inflated score every now and then, and he scored a few versus India now in the recent past. But I just love how, in a world where number threes are struggling, somehow Ollie Pope has his place locked down now.
Yeah, and he did it coming into this series, right? Like, I mean, even coming into this series, Rob Key was talking about how Bethel might come in. Hmm. He really is one of the most fascinating players and I just wonder how we're going to think about him. I mean, he hasn't reached his peak yet, right? But also, if you told me after 30 he plays 3 test matches, I'd also be like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, there are so many variables with him that I just do not understand.
True. Anyway, so let's come to the chase finally. We spoke about how Jack Rawley was uncharacteristic and lucky. And then, of course, Job Root was his reliable self, destroyer of India. And he played a clutch knock under pressure. But the guy of this test, or the man of the match, the player of the match, was Ben Duckett. 62 in the first innings, gets dropped, doesn't matter. And then he scores this match-winning 149 in the fourth innings. His first fourth innings 100, and the first fourth innings 100 by an opener from England since Alistair Cook back in Mirpur in 2010. So that's a big one. Ben Duckett is just like, you know, we always talk about his sweeping, and he did sweep a lot, and he spammed the reverse sweep. We don't talk about his pull. He's a great aerial puller. He's a great grounded puller. He has so many shots on offer with his punches and drives, and he has evolved to a point where right now I feel like he is England's most valuable asset across all formats because he's great in ODIs. He's cutting it at T20 level as well. And in Test cricket, playing the way he does, he's averaging close to 44.
It really is. I mean, he wasn't that far away from just losing his career, right? Like, let's be honest. He really wasn't that far away. It's a remarkable turnaround, I think, for him. And well done to him. He plays the way he wants to play. This is a great innings. It's weirdly not one of the greatest innings at Headingley just because of all the other ridiculous chases. But it's still one of the great innings. You know, he carried England for a long period of time. It basically meant that England never had to worry about attacking. Right? They were ahead of the chase all the way because they just couldn't stop Duckett. And we've seen some really good innings from him now. And the last couple of years have just been ridiculous. And again, a bit like Pope, if he had a 2-year period where he didn't make any runs, I'd be like, okay, fair enough. He probably overachieved for a little period of time. But he's so hard to stop scoring. And, you know, he's playing the on drive today. It's not even really one of his shots. It feels like to me he's getting better. You know, maybe this is the peak of Ben Duckett. We never see anything like this again, but it just feels like he's working things out on the fly.
I love the fact how he closed up his stance versus Bumrah, and that's why he had those gentle dabs down the ground for 4, because he was protecting his off stump and he was making sure that he doesn't play on like he did in the first innings. And what I see in Ben Duckett is a batter who's evolved a lot, and I was surprised that this was his first ever player of the match award, because the way he plays, I'd expected him to have a lot more. Anyway, before we leave, we've got another super chat from Keshav Huria. And by the way, those of you who don't know, Keshav makes music. So go check his Spotify out. He says...
Oh, I didn't pay us that much.
Yeah. Well, Keshav asks, why Jadeja has a compulsion to bowl darts without varying his pace? Very good question. Even with his experience, it took him 10 years to start using the rough going wide of the crease. Panth and Gill kept asking him to bowl slow. He's not your Keshav Maharaj or Mitch Santner, I suppose. He's a different kind of slow left arm orthodox spinner.
Yeah. The thing with him is... We've seen this before. He's not bowling fast. He's bowling his speed. So his speed is about 88 to 92.
Yeah.
Right. And so what you're asking him to do is to change what is successful for him. And I think that's what he struggles the most with. Right. Yeah. He's not Ashwin. Ashwin can gear up and gear down. Right. And then also go in the middle. That's why Ashwin's one of the most versatile spinners we've ever seen.
Yes.
Jadeja's never been that. He, you know, we used to laugh at him and call him an automaton, right? Like, you know, a wind-up toy that Dhoni used to use. It's not as easy for him to bowl slow in the same way that, like, if you have a bowler who doesn't have a good Yorker, and you're like, well, this is the time to bowl a Yorker, chances are they're not going to be very good at bowling Yorkers.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's never had that ability. And unfortunately, it does, on wickets like this, he does need to bowl slower, right? And even when he slows it down, I don't think he's as effective because he doesn't get through his action correctly.
Yes.
So Gareth Batty will say this all the time. He'll be like, you want your spinners to bowl faster and bowl slower, but we don't really ask seamers at the same, right? You want, really, what you want is them to bowl their optimal speed, and you hope that that is effective on most surfaces. It's actually very hard for a spinner. Like, if I have to bowl slower, in the old days, I used to bowl very slow, and then I fixed my action. I started bowling leg spin a lot quicker. I now have trouble bowling leg spin slowly because I get through my action. If I can't, I have to slow down getting through my action, which means I just bowl bad.
Yeah.
Like I don't just bowl slower, I bowl crapper. And I think there's an element of that with lots of spinners. And because they're a spinner, we're just like, you should bowl faster, you should bowl slower. That's not how it works, right? The greatest of all time can do this, right? But it took Shane Warne years to get bowling faster in Asia, especially in India, to be more effective, right? It's not a thing that you can just click your fingers and be good at. And, you know, it took Nathan Lyon years to do it as well. It took Kuldeep, what, 2 or 3 years to change his pace?
Yeah.
I just don't think people really truly understand spin bowling. And they just think he's bowling slow. And he's bowling fast. That's not how it is.
True. All right. There's a very interesting... Wait for the super chat because I love Phil's question. Ooh. He says, is KL Rahul the best test bat with a sub-35 average? How dare you say that in Jared's presence when you know what he will think about this?
WG Grace is rolling over in cricket hell.
Exactly. And by the way, love KL Rahul, but dude, WG Grace wins this. All right. Final super chat, hopefully. Koshal Telepadi says, thoughts on Sai Sudarshan?
Thought he looked good in the second innings. Thought he shaped up okay.
Yeah.
No issues there. How long did he bat in the first innings? It wasn't long. He got that weird one down the leg side that he chased.
It was a planned strangle, though. They did set him up for that strangle.
Yeah. So what I would say about this is, someone asked me about this the other day. It's still unlucky.
Yes.
Because the amount of time, I saw people try to do this to Steve Smith for about 4 years, and he just managed to always miss the fielder. So it was a planned strangle, but yeah, there was still a little bit lucky. But I thought he'd lined up quite well in the second innings before, probably getting himself out at a time where I thought he was going okay.
Yeah, also he's 23 years of age, so let's not be too critical.
Yeah. Not too worried, yeah.
Vibor Seth says, what advice would you give Jaiswal for his fielding? Go practice.
We talked about it a little bit before. Look, I'd be interested to know where he fields in first-class cricket. My guess is he probably doesn't field at third and fourth slip. And I know not all the mistakes were at third and fourth slip.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you get to test cricket, you field in positions that you don't field in naturally. If you're the best bat in your team, find your way to first slip pretty regularly, right? He might also be a mid-off or a mid-on in his team, but now they have bowlers who do that. Like, I would probably be talking to him about that. But as I said before, remember that KP started really poorly, but I don't remember KP being a terrible fielder by the end of his career. You know, Matt Prior dropped a bunch of catches when he was in Sri Lanka when he first started as well, right? Like, you can have those sorts of things. I wouldn't really be overly worried about that. The only thing I would say from that is, though, that they need to have conversations with him to make sure it's not going to affect the rest of his cricket.
True.
Or
you need to give him confidence, honestly, because he is a special talent. Anyway, that wraps up this live show. So thank you to everyone in the comments section for your interactions and all of you for your super chats as well. Let's see how this series shapes up. England are 1-0 up, but I mean, you never know. I personally feel whichever team wins this, it'll be close. It'll be like 3-2 or 3-1. But yeah, we'll see you soon enough with lots of other fun content. Jared has Kimapa tomorrow, which you can look forward to. There'll be a wagon wheel. There'll be quick picks later in the week. But that's all for today, guys. Have a good one. Enjoy yourselves. Congratulations, England fans, and commiserations, India fans. We'll see you guys soon enough. That's all for now. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, Go to minvo.pro to cut it.